This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Andy Griffith actor Jim Nabors found dead at age 87. We go there now on Tactics.
My brakes are on fire.
Morning, everybody.
I'm trying to slow down. I'm always burning.
Welcome to Tactics. It is great to be with you on this Friday morning. I apologize for being out yesterday. I don't believe in lying to your audience. I'm always up front with y'all. They had me on some very strong medication. I stayed up a little too late, and frankly, I just slapped through my alarm. But I am back today. Everything's good. I got to tell you, hopefully, most of you will never have to experience this, but they put you on some really strong medication when you're going through cancer to help with the nausea. And it pretty much knocks you out. You don't have a lot of choice in it. And so if you take it too late, it will mess with you and it will cause you to oversleep. But nonetheless, I'm here today. Everything is good. We're trying to make sure everything is right for you today. And I do have, unfortunately, some very sad news for you this morning. An Alabama native, Jim Nabors, who most of you are probably far more familiar with under his character's name, Gomer Pyle, died the other day at age 87. They found him in his Hawaii home. And, of course, he is from Sylacauga, Alabama, originally, so not far from here at all, right here in the near the river region. And many people don't know this. He was not only famous for his roles in Andy Griffith and Gomer Pyle, of course, the spinoff show that about his character being in the Marines, but he was also a singer. So there's a lot of things to remember today, and I did just because I'm a huge Andy Griffith fan and because, well, frankly, there's not that many cast members left now, I thought that it might be nice to give a quick tribute to Gomer Pyle and some of the best moments that he had. So we're going to go ahead and do that here in just a moment. I'm going to go ahead and pull this up. I put this together myself last night, so here we go, a tribute to Gomer Pyle.
Gosh,
Shazam!
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 Golly!
Golly!
Shazam!
Little enough for the man that saved my life.
Saved your life?
Now look, it was just a few old rags smoldering.
A roaring blaze swept through the filling station yesterday afternoon, and I was trapped inside. A goner! Then Andy battled his way in. I'd perish for sure if he hadn't have.
Gosh, golly, golly,
Shazam.
Gosh,
Shazam.
Goner, where's Andy? They dumped me. The gold's gone. We've been hijacked.
Hijacked? Shazam.
What? Andy, you're letting him get away. What are you doing?
Barney, listen.
But they're standing in that truck. They're crooks. We're going to get away.
Barney, listen. They're not crooks.
Huh?
They just told me the reason they grabbed you was about to give away their plan.
But that truck...
The truck was nothing but a decoy.
A decoy? Shazam.
That's all it was.
You mean there was never any gold in that truck?
No.
A decoy? Shazam.
They said that was their plan. To let folks think that was the truck with the gold in it, while the real truck went by a different route.
A decoy?
Shazam.
Shazam.
Golly,
golly,
golly, golly,
golly,
golly,
golly,
Shazam,
gosh,
golly,
golly, oh, Shazam.
You know what my daddy told me a long time ago? I'll never forget it. We were sitting out on the front porch in the summertime. It's hot, we couldn't sleep. And he said, son, someday when you grow up, they're going to test you to see how much of a man you are. And you're going to have to make it on your own, because I ain't going to be there to help you. That's what my daddy said. And right here's where I'm going to get tested, the United States Marine Corps.
In so many ways, I think that the best way to gauge the quality and the timelessness of a TV show in my opinion, and I say this as somebody who has a degree in communication, studied broadcasting, I've written papers on sitcoms, which sounds weird, but that was part of the curriculum. I think really the measure of a great TV show is one that can go from making you laugh to making you really think very quickly. And in the case of that last little tribute that I played, you know, you had a lot of the really funny, clever moments written by the people that worked on Andy Griffith, but at the same time, you also had that moment at the end where there's this really personal story and personal side of Gomer that even though he's this goofy, wonky kind of character, that he also does have a backstory and there is some depth to him. Even though of the characters in Mayberry, you would kind of expect Gomer to be one of the ones that doesn't have a whole lot of backstory or fleshing out, but they did enough of it to where I thought there was a really good message in that episode where he went off to go to the Marines, and there are some really deep messages in that show. I wanted to play real quick, and this isn't a compilation, this is just a clip from the show, it's a little bit longer, one of my favorite scenes from the Andy Griffith Show, and by far my favorite scene involving Gomer, so we're going to go ahead there and listen to that now.
Hey, Barn. Well, oh, my turn to talk? I'd like to hear some kind of an explanation.
Well, pick a subject and I'll do my best.
You want me to pick a subject? I'll pick a subject if that's what you want. I'll pick one. U-turns.
Oh, you mean what I just done?
Yeah, come on, explain.
Well, I think you're making a mistake, Barn.
Oh?
You're talking to an emergency vehicle.
And you're on an emergency mission, I suppose.
You could call it that.
Yeah, I seen you coming out of the post office. Don't try and hide it. Here's your emergency. A postcard and a copy of Mechanics Monthly.
Now, wait a minute, Barn. You're not going to write me a ticket, are you?
I'd like you to tell me why not.
Well, I'm one of your friends.
Gomer, for 10 years, I have yet to betray the public trust. Now, I'd be some public servant if I were to allow personal relationships to stand in the way of the performance of my duty.
What are you getting at?
I'm giving you a ticket for committing the 9/11.
Oh, come on, Barn. Tell you what, let me back up to where I started, and that'll sort of undo that 9/11, won't
it? If I didn't think you were kidding, I'd hit you with a 9/12.
What's a 9/12?
Insulting an officer's intelligence.
Well, I was just trying to right a wrong that I don't think was in the first place. Come on, Barn, don't give me a ticket. We're pals.
Gomer, that simply does not enter into it. Now, my oath stipulates that I'm to uphold the law. If my mother made a U-turn, I'd give her a ticket. Here you are. $5 fine payable within 1 week. Failure to do so may result in imprisonment and or a $100 fine, or both, as the jurisdiction of the court may so decide.
You just go.
What was that?
You just go up an alley and holler, fish. I said it and I ain't taking it back, neither.
Gomer, try to look at it from my side, will you? You see, you broke the law. Now, let me finish. Now, it's from little misdemeanors that major felonies grow. And it's my duty, it's anybody's duty, to stop them before they get too far. Now, the law must be upheld. Now, if I, as just plain John Doe, an ordinary citizen, were to see you making a U-turn, I'd have to make a citizen's arrest. Gomer, you'll be a better man if you'll try to think of us all working together for a common cause. All right, everybody, bring it up. Let's go back to your homes and places of business. Come on, bring it up. Let's go.
That Barney's something, isn't he? And there he goes, making the illegal U-turn himself.
Stop, Barney, stop. This is the riot.
There goes Gomer.
You yelling about?
Like you said, you broke the law by making an illegal U-turn, and I hereby, as a citizen of the town of Mayberry in the United States of America, arrest you.
Hooray!
Now, just a minute, what are you talking about?
You made a U-turn, and as a law-abiding citizen, it's my duty to call you on it. You're supposed to be setting examples for the rest of us.
Sure, that's right. Yeah, you yelling now, Gomer, just a minute. This little black and white baby here is a real emergency vehicle. Now, why don't you just stop trying to get even?
But you weren't on no emergency call.
Gosh, you weren't on no emergency call.
Just a minute!
understand.
You made a mistake, Deputy. Now write yourself out a ticket.
That's right.
You got to be kidding.
You hear that, folks? There are two sets of laws. One for the police and one for the ordinary citizen.
What's going on here? What's going on?
All this boob here.
Boob? Well, that's an insult in the face of the public. There ought to be a number law that covers that.
Oh, you be still. We're going to give you the back of the gasoline tank.
All right, well, that's enough of that, but you get the idea. Jim Nabors, very talented actor. That was, in my opinion, one of the best ones, his best scene in the show, just because of how he played it, and of course him and Barney getting into it with one another, which happened quite a bit. You know, you may be asking yourself why I'm going through all this, because there are very important things going on in the world right now, and I understand that. We've got big news on what's going on with Donald Trump, which we're going to get to in just a second. There's everything going on with ISIS and North Korea and Russia and China. And we've also got issues here domestically. I mean, we've got a country that's maybe more divided now than it has been since the Civil War. And yet here I am, as somebody who takes these things very seriously, playing Andy Griffith clips in honor of somebody that passed away from our home state. So you may be asking why I'm doing that and why I'm leading with that in my show. But I think that there's a message here. Gomer, his character, wasn't particularly bright. He wasn't necessarily all that charming. And with the exception of his singing voice, which they only talk about, I think, in one episode, he wasn't especially talented either. He was just kind of a normal guy that worked at a filling station. But you know what? Back then, that was enough. You didn't need fame or glory. You weren't constantly trying to get likes on Facebook and Instagram and all those other places. In a world as obsessed with likes as we are, I think it's made us very critical of things. Because we're constantly going through everything, either clicking thumbs up or thumbs down. Which is fine, that's how we get feedback and that's how we improve things on the internet, but at the same time, look how critical it's made us. Everything has to be a certain way. And things weren't like that back then, and they weren't like that in Mayberry. Gomer was a good, honest guy. He was friendly, he was respectful to people, he was polite, he worked hard, and that was enough for people, and people liked him because of it. They didn't necessarily go to him for philosophy or life advice or any of that stuff, but, you know, people in the town respected him. And I think that says a lot about how our society has changed. Maybe with everything being so fast and complicated as it is now, we've lost the appreciation for the simple. And maybe constantly being bombarded with all these negative news stories has made us a little cynical, too. I'm not saying we need to put our heads in the sand. I'm not saying we need to just go off and watch sitcoms, because obviously that's not what I'm in the business of, and I think that these news stories are important, but every once in a while, I think it's important to stop and take everything in and have a little perspective. You know, the world could use a little Mayberry right now, and honestly, that's part of the reason that I did this, so... You know, our hearts go out to Jim Nabors and his family and everyone involved in that, but at least we've got a lot of great Andy Griffith episodes to remember him by. We'll be right back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Bible is a book worth more than all the other books that were ever printed. Patrick Henry.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. You can also tweet me at Tactics Radio and let me know what is on your mind. I'd be glad to do that, read some of your tweets on here. We can talk about Jim Nabors, but there's another thing that we got to talk about right now because it is breaking news. This happened just this morning. Apparently, Michael Flynn, former national security advisor for the president, and you remember he campaigned for him, was a very, very early Trump supporter. Michael Flynn has been charged and apparently taken into custody as well for lying to the FBI. So this is probably going to be your biggest news story of the day. He's apparently been brought in. Based on the latest reports, it says that he's going to enter his plea at 10:30, it looks like. So actually just in a few minutes, because I'm assuming that's in Eastern time. So when it says 10:30, I assume they mean 9:30 our time. So this is something we're going to keep an eye on, see what happens. He is expected to plead guilty. Just because of the situation surrounding this, the fact that he's entering his plea so early, it looks like he's going to plead guilty. And what that probably means is that he has entered some kind of plea deal. Now, with Michael Flynn, it is important to note that of all the charges that could have theoretically been brought against him by Mueller and the FBI, right now, the only thing that it looks like they're talking to him about is Russia, which is, there's a couple reasons that may be. First of all, that's beyond the purview of the special counsel to go after people connected to Trump with things that are not involved with Russia. So it may be that the reason that they're charging him with that is because they see it as the only thing that's germane to this particular investigation. But it could also be, and this is also likely, or at least equally as likely in my mind, that part of the reason that this is the only charge being brought against him is this is part of a plea deal. Because Michael Flynn was very concerned about everything that was going on in Turkey, taking money from them, not registering as a foreign agent. And his son was apparently involved in that as well. And because of that, it's possible that he said, I'm going to give you Trump if you keep me and my son out of it. And the only thing I'm charged with is lying to the FBI. Could be. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll wait just a few minutes. There's a couple things that are important to keep in mind here. This relates directly to Sergei Kislyak, that Michael Flynn was lying about having spoken to him and what they talked about, the content of what they talked about. This would have been very close. And this is one of the things that I was incredibly worried about and cautious about early on, that Michael Flynn was not somebody that needed to be that close to the president. I said the same thing about Paul Manafort, and of course we know the situation that he's in now. There were a couple other people, same thing with Steve Bannon. Of course, Steve Bannon is not accused of a crime, but he's no longer with the White House. There are several people, and this is where it comes into a problem with, I know a lot of people liked the fact that Donald Trump was unconventional, that he ran his campaign in an unconventional way, but this is the problem with not having anybody within your inner circle with some conventional wisdom when it comes to campaigns, is some of these people that are less than savory characters would be the nicest way to put it, can get involved, and it's harder to have people that know we don't need to be involved in this. So Michael Flynn, of course, who was the national security advisor for not very long before he had to resign, he is now going before the FBI. Is this going to hurt Trump? I got to be honest, I don't know. I don't know how much this is going to hurt Trump's credibility or if it's going to do anything at all. Now, to watch the national news talk about this, you would think that this is the biggest thing that's ever happened, and this is going to be what gets Trump impeached. Honestly, if the Manafort thing didn't do that, I don't think there's anything that's going to. Manafort, to me, would have been the most unsavory character within the ranks of the Trump campaign. But regardless, I think that this is going to hinder Trump, at least somewhat, but we'll have to see where it goes. I don't think this is going to bring him down like some of the national news are now salivating over the idea of. So it's important to keep this into perspective and put a little context on it. Take it away, Rush.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
John 8:31 and 32. So Jesus was saying to those Jews who had believed him, "If you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free."
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in and let me know what is on your mind, you can also tweet me at Tactics Radio. I'm keeping CNN on in the background, just seeing if they're going to go ahead and jump to that particular plea. I imagine they're going to. It looks like, yeah, they've got a few more minutes, so we're going to just try to stay on top of this, see if we can go to it live. If we can't, you know, that's just the way it goes, but we're going to try to go to live coverage if we can. Nonetheless, let's go ahead and jump to the phones. Looks like we've got a caller on line one, so let's go ahead and do that. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, sir. What's your name?
Ben, and I got to ask you something. I got to say this.
Sure, sure.
What happened to Benghazi? What happened to all the lies that were told, not only to the American public, but the FBI? YouTube video? Forget Russia and all that, this crap. This is a bunch of crap. Where's the arrest? Who are they going to hold responsible for that? Hillary Clinton, all the lies she told. When are they going to arrest her, the FBI? When are they going after all the other idiots in the Obama administration that lied?
Well, Ben,
yeah, there was plenty of daggum crimes committed during that time.
Ben,
you hear what I'm saying?
Oh, I hear you.
What about Benghazi, Ambassador Stevens, and those victims?
Well, here's the thing, Ben. Were you, and I promise I'm going somewhere with this, so just humor me here. Were you listening to our tribute to Jim Nabors in the first segment?
I was.
Do you remember that line where there's it seems to me there's laws for the police and laws for the regular people?
Exactly.
That's what's going on.
That's what I'm sick and tired of. I am, you know, and most of the American public, I'm sure, is like me, you know. This is getting ridiculous. It's nuts.
Well, here's the thing, Ben.
What Obama whispering to the ambassador of Russia, whoever he was on stage.
Oh, see, Russia was the left's buddy back then.
Yeah, exactly. Russia, to me, is not the worst threat to us right now. Is North Korea. You don't hear a damn thing about what he's doing. Excuse me.
Well, I'm sorry. I got to cut you off there, Ben. You can't cuss on my airwaves. I appreciate your call, but you got to be more careful. But I understand you being fired up. I really do. I understand you being angry, and I don't blame you for that, because it is incredibly frustrating to watch somebody like Hillary Clinton that they have dead to rights. That is, I mean, you can look at Benghazi, you can look at how she's destroyed all the emails in association with that. I mean, watching the FBI look you in the face, the American people, and say, we're not going to recommend any charges. And then seeing the treatment here, I understand the frustration. It bothers me too. However, I do think, and I'm, you know, just stay with me here. I do think that it's important to get to the bottom of the Russia investigation. I gotta believe, based on what I'm seeing right now, they don't have anything that leads to Trump directly. Now, I think that there is evidence, and we've seen some evidence of Russia having a scary amount of influence in the Trump campaign as an organization, with Paul Manafort, with Michael Flynn. But as we just found out a few days ago, they had a scary amount of influence in the Clinton camp too. And this is what I constantly go back to when talking about the Russia thing. Russia is a giant geopolitical threat. They are. Anybody that tells you any differently is lying to you, or they're merely unaware of what's going on. However, they're not a threat to the Democrats or the Republicans. They are a threat to America. They're not playing sides. They don't care about who's in power. They don't care whether it's Hillary Clinton, whether it's Donald Trump, or whether it's somebody else. They want the influence. And honestly, the difference between Russia working with the Clintons and Russia working with the Trump campaign seems to be that the Clintons were a lot better at it. Because if you're looking at that opposition research with that dossier that was put out, well, that actually did make the news rounds, and they did get that information from Russia. The Trump campaign, apparently, with what we know about Donald Trump Jr., did try to collude with Russia, but didn't get a thing out of them. So, if anything, the Clintons are just a lot better at working with Russia, and probably because they have some experience in doing so. Let's look at the Uranium One deal. So it is important to add all that context, and it is bothersome to me that we're seeing this special investigation going after the Trump campaign when we don't have an investigation on Russia's influence over our election as a whole, which I would really like to see, because based on everything that we know, I know there's going to be some Trump people that get upset with me for saying this, but look, based on what we know, it had nothing to do with who won the election. And the practices that they were trying to use to hack into our election would not have favored one side or the other. It would have just created chaos. And that's exactly what Russia wants. Russia wants us to not be able to trust one another. They want us divided. They want us fighting over them. And they want to take our place as the world superpower. And none of that has anything to do with whether or not there's a Republican or a Democrat in office. So when guys like Ben call in and talk to me about how unfair it is that we're seeing one investigation, no, I understand. I really do. It is frustrating to see some people that seem to be able to get away with literally anything, even when there's bodies on the ground, and get off completely scot-free, and then see this other investigation that's trying to connect this person to that person who is connected to that person who knew a friend of a friend of the cousin's wife, step-niece's great-grandsister. I mean, I know none of that made any sense, but that's my point. And then trying to connect all the dots through that when it really doesn't make any sense. And yet, when there's a clear one-to-one line between a former Secretary of State, for example, and her husband giving a massive speech, or giving a speech for a massive amount of money, oh, about 3 days separated from Russia getting control of about 20% of American uranium, and nobody says anything, and that's basically a straight line. Well, yeah, that does get frustrating. And I understand his point. So, appreciate that call, Ben. Let's look here what we've got. It looks as though they have yet to get inside the courtroom. I don't know if they're actually going inside the courtroom. It looks like the coverage right now is outside the courthouse. I don't know if we're actually going to get video of what's going on inside the court. Right now, it's just an expected guilty plea. That's all we've got right now. So we will keep you up to date on that as long as we can. I'm going to have it on in the background just to let you know what's happening, because this is going to be a big deal. It's going to be much bigger than the whole thing with Papadopoulos, because Michael Flynn was a big supporter. He was in there very, very early on. He was one of the big faces of the Trump campaign, and also when he was as national security advisor, he was put out, so he had a big name job. Papadopoulos was, I mean, the guy was low fish on the totem pole, so that didn't make a big difference. The Manafort thing was a big deal, and we continue to follow that. I don't know if they're going to use that as a way to get in, but Manafort's a very slippery fish, so I don't know if the investigation on him is going to go anywhere either, unfortunately, because I don't care whether or not it has anything to do with the Trump campaign, but Manafort's been involved in some incredibly shady stuff directly with Russia. So hopefully we do get to learn more about that. Until we have more on this story, though, and it doesn't look like we have him pleading guilty or innocent yet, we may keep you up to date on that. I thought we'd go ahead and talk about a couple other things while we're waiting on that. First of all, Matt Lauer. I said the other day on Wednesday that there's got to be more to this story than one single complaint for this guy. Well, the floodgates have absolutely opened on that, and there are allegations everywhere. I have no idea how many of these things are true. It's going to take days, maybe weeks, to sort through which of these have some credibility and which ones don't. So apparently the intern that complained that started this whole thing, the reason that they were able to fire him within 12 hours and the reason that moved so quickly is, in a lot of ways, because there was photographic evidence. And so that's the thing. When you have just an allegation of somebody doing something untoward, I think if that's all she had, they probably would have waited a little longer, especially with someone as high profile as Matt Lauer. However, evidently, based on this, she had pictures, and that's why it happened so fast, because she had photographic evidence that he had been sending her, which This is according to the New York Post. My question on that is, why in the information age would you ever take a naked picture of yourself? I mean, that's just begging to get out on the internet somewhere. And so now where we have cameras on everything and information can be sent so quickly and get out so fast, I don't know why this day and age anybody would ever have a naked picture of themselves. I mean, unless it's in a super secure location and not something you send to somebody, which you don't even know whether or not what they're going to do with it, what they're going to use it for, any of that stuff. So I just, especially if you're having an affair or something like Matt Lauer would have done, I do not understand why you would do that to yourself and put yourself in such a vulnerable position, especially with somebody as high profile as Matt Lauer. So Variety, they put out a big article the other day, and they also claimed that he was inviting women from NBC into his hotel room during the coverage of the Olympics. So evidently, looking at this, there is some level of sexual assault and sexual harassment and some stuff that was unwanted, but it seems as though a lot of it was consensual. And so he kind of falls into the, I don't want to say exactly this category because no two cases are alike, and it's, you have to be real careful when comparing things like this. He would have been more along the Bill Clinton line, and by that I mean somebody who was a philanderer, who had a lot of consensual relationships with people, and then also some where, you know, maybe the woman felt that if she didn't do something there that she would lose her job, which, by the way, this is a terrifying standard to hold just because the way that we've gotten so incredibly sensitive to it, and I think there's a lot of good that comes from that. There's a lot of good from people being worried about this because the stuff that Matt Lauer was alleged to have done, the stuff that we're seeing from guys like Charlie Rose and so on and so forth, that's wrong and it needs to be weeded out. But one thing that I'm afraid of, like, let's say you're a middle manager at just a store, a media company like I'm at. Would you ever dare date anybody at your work now in the context of today? Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that we should not pursue people like Lauer, like these other guys that are involved in this. All I'm suggesting is think about some of the repercussions this is going to have. Because I got to tell you, if I'm a assistant general manager, I mean, just an assistant, not even the GM, at a restaurant or something like that, there is no way I would even ask somebody at work out because of all this. And a lot of people meet their spouses at work. So I'm not sure exactly what all this has to do, but some of these allegations against Matt Lauer, really interesting and in some cases revealing stuff. I was surprised by this. I know a lot of people say that they knew about it, that they had heard rumors that he was kind of a ladies' man, but I got to tell you, this really surprised me. I didn't know any of this. And maybe it's because I'm not really a fan of the Today Show, but I was unaware that a lot of this stuff was going on. But based on some of the recent reporting, there were a lot of people at NBC that knew about it. And we're going to go there in just a minute.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Christian religion is, above all the religions that ever prevailed or existed in ancient or modern times, the religion of wisdom, virtue, equity, and humanity. John Adams.
Welcome back, all. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in at Tactics Radio, that would be the way to tweet me if you want to tweet in about what's going on. It doesn't look like we're going to be able to get coverage inside the courtrooms because I don't think the major news networks are even getting inside the courtrooms. It looks like all the coverage is outside, so we won't be able to go to that right now. They are expecting him to plead guilty, though. That's what all the major networks are talking about. So we're going to assume that that's going on right now. There's really not much else to cover. But we are going to jump to the phones. Let's go ahead and go to John from Millbrook on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, wanted to, first of all, I appreciate the tribute being given to Jim Nabors. And that was a simpler time. And when you reflect on some of those shows, and I'm not an expert on many things in life, but you can attest to the fact that I am an expert on Andy Griffith, and I'm like the late, great Jim Fife. He used to do some of the trivia on this very station.
Right.
And it was a lot of fun for him to do that. And I think about the one of the episodes that he did that was meaningful to me was when it was set up to go to Gomer Pyle USMC because he was going in there, and he said that he was going to be tested and that he would have to just live up to the test that was coming. And I remember the episode about the ugly girlfriend that Thelma Lou's cousin that he ended up going out with, that was supposed to go to the dance with. A lot of good episodes. And as far as the show is concerned, it's good to reflect and reminisce about a simpler time where people had, I think, more integrity than they do now. It was a simpler life, and neighbors and friends were much more important than they are now. Before social media and all of the other things that we see in our current society, I would like to go back to a little bit more of that.
You know, I think so as well. And one of the points that was brought out, and this might have even been brought out by Jim Fife, I don't remember where I heard this, but there was a point that was made once to me that I thought was really profound about Mayberry and the impact that that show had on people. And one of the things that was brought up is Otis is kind of a microcosm of what the show meant to folks. And what he meant by that was saying that, you know, Otis is the town drunk. He's not exactly someone who you would consider reputable, but he's not hurting anybody. And Andy just kind of let him go ahead and come and go with even the person that we would think is a reprobate and somebody that did not necessarily meet up to society standards of being a productive member of society. Even he had the integrity to stay in jail when he was supposed to and follow the rules and that kind of thing. Now, he broke the law on drinking. But there was a level of integrity and honor even amongst the people that were not necessarily the most reputable people in the community, and they all did respect each other and didn't want to do anything to hurt one another because they were all neighbors.
Mm-hmm. There's so many lessons that were learned from it. I know that.
You're breaking up a little bit. Are you still there?
I'm here. I know that Andy sometimes was stretching in the truth some.
Yeah, now he did do that.
It wasn't full of integrity,
Yeah, I think I'm losing you, so we're going to have to let you go. John from Millbrook, everybody, thank you for your call there. But I do think that there was a level of honor and integrity, and there were lines that you did not cross in that society, that it was just understood and everybody did it. For example, I know that it's kind of hokey, and we think of it as weird looking back on it, but there were certain scenes that you just did not see. For example, I know a lot of the characters were single anyway, but it was a really big deal with Bewitched that there was a couple of scenes where you saw their bedroom. Nothing happened. Just them laying in bed together was seen as kind of risque. And so, especially when you're looking at Andy Griffith, I mean, everything was so clean. And I remember listening to an interview from one of the TV producers that was doing shows right around then, and he said, well, we always looked at that as we were invited into a person's home. And that's actually something that I took with me, and I do on this show myself, is that part of the reason that I have the policy that I did, and I enforce it even with people that I agree with, and I just proved that with Ben. If you get riled up and use an unsavory word, I cut you off immediately. No two ways about it. And if you do it a few times, you get banished. But part of the reason that I do that is the way that I see it. I'm being invited into your car. I'm riding in the car with your family. And if I would not say it, if I were, for example, just riding shotgun in your car on the way to work when you're going to drop your kids off to school, if I wouldn't say it in front of your children, I don't need to say it on the airwaves. And that's something that they really believed back then. And it's something that they abided by. And when it comes to TV, one of the things that I liked about that show is that they treated it like that. That everybody kind of saw it as, we are being invited into this person's home to put on a performance for him and his children. Let's not do anything that would put them into a position to where they have to make a judgment call on whether or not they have to shut the TV off or not. And understand why that went by the wayside, but it was a simpler time, and there was some wisdom in that. And when it comes to the show Andy Griffith, one of the things that I liked about it is it did show so much that they had a community, that they really cared about one another. Let's go ahead and go to the phones on line one. Good morning, who's this?
Hey, Caleb, how are you?
I'm doing good, but I only have a few seconds, so make your point real quick.
Okay, I don't know if I have time to do it to say what I wanted to say, but I agree what you're saying about the Andy Griffith Show, and all
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
My bad, I went into my intro already, but don't worry, we're going to be talking taxes and tax reform in just a moment. Welcome in, everybody. Hour two of the show is on now. Apparently, I've got a little bit of weekenditis myself because I'm still trying to keep everything straight over here with trying to keep up with what CNN and Fox News are doing right now with the Michael Flynn investigation and trying to keep my show notes straight and produce all at the same time. It's a one-man band show down here, and I'm doing the best that I can to keep this boat afloat. But nonetheless, y'all don't want to hear about that. I do want to talk about this tax plan because it does look like, at least according to one Texas senator, by the way, not Ted Cruz, John Cornyn's the House representative that is under scrutiny right now for sexual harassment, the other Texas senator. But anyway, so we're looking at this right now, and it looks as though the GOP has a real chance at getting this thing passed. However, this scares me a little bit because one of the things that the GOP is talking about doing is an auto tax increase. So in this bill, they're talking about including this, and this may make it into the final wording of the bill, which terrifies me, that it would kick in without a vote if revenue dips. So in other words, let's say the GOP plan passes, tax cuts eventually wind up going through, people start seeing a tax cut. If revenue dips, there would be an auto tax raise written into the bill that would just automatically kick those rates up to their previous spot to increase revenue. Well, like I've said before, eventually what happens when you cut taxes is usually about a year after. Maybe two, but usually it happens a lot faster than that. You actually see a revenue increase because the economy is doing better. It spurs on the economy and you have more tax payers, even though they're paying smaller rates individually. Because you have such an increase in tax payers, your tax revenue actually increases. But if there's a dip even before that, this would undo it. With Republicans like this, who needs Democrats? Auto tax hikes built into the system that you don't even have to vote on? Good gracious, Republicans. Is there any part of you that is sincere? Seriously, you talk about lowering taxes, you talk about the free market, all this stuff, and then you throw in something like this? Something that completely undoes your own bill? If something unexpected happens? Why are Republicans so horrified at the idea of not being deficit neutral? Now, I understand that in a spending bill, wanting to make sure that the new spending doesn't cost anything, which, by the way, it never freaking does. Remember, that's what we were told about Obamacare, which, I mean, we knew that was a lie. We're going to be covering all these people on health insurance, and it's not going to cost us anything. Well, that there's no way that's true. That defies logic, reason, and reality. and the basic laws of economics. There's no such thing as a free lunch. But with this, they're so concerned that the revenue might dip even a little bit, which it usually does right before we see a massive increase, that they're saying, well, it'll just automatically set taxes back to the way that they were. Well, that means you don't really believe in tax reform. You don't really believe in lower taxes. I don't want the government to operate at the level that it's operating at right now. I don't want all the programs that are being funded to be funded right now. And if Republicans believed what they claim to believe, they would say the same thing. Why would Republicans want the government to operate at the level it is currently at? Why would they want government to stay at the size that it is? See, I want smaller government that spends less money and thus takes less in taxes. I'm not afraid of that. I'm in favor of that. But for whatever reason, the Republicans seem to be terrified at the idea that they'll shrink government even a little bit. Goodness knows that I have had my differences with Donald Trump, and I have been very vocal about it. But one thing that I do appreciate is, at least from an administrative level, he has proposed and talked about budgets where entire programs get slashed, which very few Republicans have ever done. I mean, you do have some. You've got your Rand Pauls, your Ted Cruz's, your Marco Rubio, some of the most conservative of it. But Donald Trump, who's not even necessarily a super conservative guy, will look at the budget and say, we're funding the National Endowment for the Arts. Why are we doing that? That's stupid. Just cut that. I mean, it was a temporary budget proposal and it didn't go through Congress, so it didn't make a difference. But my point is, I understand people's frustration with these establishment Republicans that want to keep every cent that is currently funding the federal government to keep going to whatever stupid program the Democrats come up with. And I understand that getting frustrating. How about this? No taxes raised. All taxes cut across the board. Everybody. Nobody is exempt from that. Everybody gets a tax cut, period. You would think with Republicans controlling the House and Republicans controlling the Senate and Republicans controlling the White House that we could get that done, but no. The Republicans are going to piddle around and give lip service to the free market, and then they're going to vote for some tax cuts on some people, but not the richest, because we don't want to be accused of caring about rich people, even though they're citizens too, and they are the people who make the jobs in this country. But they ignore all that. Let's just talk about how evil those rich people are, and we don't want the Democrats to be able to lob accusations about us caring about rich people. So we're just going to cut some taxes here, and oh, actually, we're going to increase the lowest rate a little bit, but it'll be okay because it'll all come out in the wash with deduction. Why don't we just cut taxes across the board? How hard is that? Why is that so difficult for them to conceive of? Because they're not really Republicans, and they don't really believe what they say they believe in. You want to hear what a real Republican sounds like on taxes? This is what a real Republican sounds like when they're talking about taxes. This is from Calvin Coolidge, who was the president in the 20s.
The country needs every ounce of its energy to restore itself. The costs of government are all assessed upon the people. This means that the farmer is doomed to provide a certain amount of money out of the sale of his produce, no matter how low the price, to pay his taxes. The manufacturer, the professional man, the clerk must do the same from their income. The wage earner, often at a higher rate when compared with his earning, makes his contribution perhaps not directly, but indirectly in the advanced cost of everything he buys. The expenses of the government reach everybody. Taxes take from everyone a part of his earnings and force everyone to work for a certain part of his time for the government. When we come to realize that the yearly expenses of the governments of this country, the stupendous sum of about $7,500,000,000, we get $700,000,000, is needed by the national government and the remainder by local governments. Such a sum is difficult to comprehend. It represents all the pay of 5 million wage earners receiving $5 a day, working 300 days in the year. If the government should add $100 million of expense, it would represent 4 days more work of these wage earners.
I want to point out here, before we continue on with this clip, that $7 billion was difficult to comprehend how much money that is the government spending. The government spends $7 billion, I mean, on a daily basis now. So keep that in mind while Calvin Coolidge is saying this.
These are some of the reasons why I want to cut down public expense. I want the people of America to be able to work less for the government and more for themselves. I want them to have the rewards of their own industry. This is the chief meaning of freedom. Until we can reestablish a condition under which the earnings of the people can be kept by the people, we are bound to suffer a very severe and distinct curtailment of our liberty. These results are not fanciful. They are not imaginary. They are grimly actual and real, reaching into every household in the land. They take from each home annually an average of over $300, and taxes must be paid. They are not a voluntary contribution to be met out of surplus earnings. They are a stern necessity. They come first. It is only out of what is left after they are paid that the necessities of food, clothing, and shelter can be provided and the comforts of home secured, are the yearnings of the soul for a broader and more abundant life gratified. When the government effects a new economy, it grants everybody a life pension with which to raise the standard of existence. It increases the value of everybody's property and raises the scale of everybody's wages. One of the greatest favors that can be bestowed upon the American people is economy in government.
So there you have it. And by the way, I looked that figure up. We're spending about $9 billion a day, so we're spending now more a day by the federal government than all government combined back when Calvin Coolidge was president. Think about that for a second. This is what a Republican should sound like. This is what someone who actually believes in lower taxes and free markets would sound like in giving a speech on taxes. The idea is that taxes are a necessary evil that robs people not only of their money, but of hours worked. That when we take something from you, we have to justify it because we're taking away hours of your life that you labored for. That's what Calvin Coolidge believed. If we take more to do more programs, we are taking your time and your labor. Thus, logically, if the government wastes it, then they are wasting your work as an American citizen. That's what Calvin Coolidge is saying to the public when he made this speech. Every single dollar taken is a dollar removed from the economy and your family's budget. Did you hear what he was saying about the family table? He's saying, we're taking food out of the mouths of your children. We better be pretty sure that we're responsible with it. And that we don't take more than we absolutely have to. Because that's taking food off of your table. You see, he saw the government as something that could lead to poverty if not managed correctly. That's why small, efficient, frugal government is the best course, and that's what he believed in. Remember, Calvin Coolidge, because he did this, he slashed taxes by a rate to where they were about a third of what they were when he took office, and cut spending in half. And he oversaw what was known as the Roaring Twenties, the most economically successful decade we have ever had in the history of this country. Think about the innovation that came there, the light bulb, the radio, technology that eventually led to the television being widespread. We had the tech, but it took a little longer. Communication changed. the economy exploded and innovation abounded because of the policies put forth by Warren G. Harding and Calvin Coolidge. You see, the Republicans of today are too timid to stand up for the things that they claim to believe. Coolidge actually did it. We need people like Calvin Coolidge, who believes that our money belongs to us, not to the government, and that the government's not doing us a favor by letting us keep our own money. That's what it means to be a conservative. That's what it means to be a constitutionalist. And frankly, that's what it means to be an American and believe in the American people. We'll be back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
You do well to wish to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and happier people than you are. George Washington.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers at Tactics Radio. That is my Twitter handle. If you want to get in touch with us through that, we can read some of your tweets on the air. Now, y'all know that I was not able to be here yesterday, which is usually when we have Joe Hunk in studio. But since we didn't get to do that yesterday, I figured we'd go ahead and do that now. So it is time for Upon Further Review.
At the review, we're winning on the field.
If you can talk sports, you can talk with any guy in the world.
When sports and politics meet, it deserves a second look.
After further review, the player disqualification is reversed.
Here with the ruling, it's Caleb Colquitt and Sports Radio 740's Joe Hunk with Upon Further Review.
Welcome back, Joe.
Oh, it's a great day. You know, here's what's bad. It's bad when Auburn is probably about, what are we looking at, probably somewhere around 28 hours away from playing for the SEC championship, and it's nowhere close to the biggest story in America, or at least
no.
biggest story in the state.
No, it's
so
really
ridiculous.
Not. This has been a crazy news week. I was glad that I was able to be in this week, because I've got literally, I think, about 6 or 8 big news stories that I just had to leave on the cutting room floor.
So what's going on with you? I mean, let's see if you can make all the sports fans feel better right now. What's going on with you?
Oh, no, I'm not going to get into all that. But I tell you what.
You've got 2 hours to talk about that, don't you?
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Well, that's why we do this segment, is because we need to let people know what's going on in the world of sports. And one of the biggest things that has been of intrigue in sports and politics is, what is going on with LeVar Ball?
I wish he'd be going off to another country. That's what I really wish he would be doing.
You know, I wonder why he hasn't done that yet, actually.
Well, it's probably because nobody else would put up with his crap. See, that's the part
Well,
about
you say
this.
Junk about that, about North Korea's president, you wind up in a hole somewhere.
Is he available to be the Tennessee head coach? I'm just curious. I'm just curious, because right now, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to call you in a little bit and see when your treatments are over with, see if you're available next year.
Oh, dude, they already offered me the job. Oh, I turned them down.
How is everybody getting offered but me? I'm the one that actually likes Tennessee as well as Auburn. Like, can you not just give me the job? But okay, no.
Now, I think Auburn fans do kind of secretly like Tennessee, just because they hate Alabama almost as much as we do.
Well, see, I love Tennessee because, again, born and bred, I will always be an Auburn fan until I die. But for half of my life, and I mean, I will still say it's not half my life anymore, but when I was 25 years old, over half my life I spent every single summer in Tennessee. And around Knoxville and around Nashville and around all these. And so I was playing baseball and I was hanging out. So I love Tennessee. Like, I love the state. I love everything. If our Cumulus station in Tennessee, which we have up in Nashville, were to offer me a job in sports talk, dude, I'd be there tomorrow. I love the city. And so I look at that. And I also look at the way that we are as a country, and the Catch Me Outside girl, who is obviously illiterate. And is a moron above morons. we now put them up on a pedestal. Like, we put her up on a pedestal. Like, it started as a joke, and then somebody
right.
decided that they wanted to do something, and now she has this popularity because the girl can't speak properly. Like, I will say right now, which is amazing because this is what I do for a living, I suck at English. I suck at it. Okay, I will literally tell you that if you were to go through my high school career and you got my transcripts, out of the 4 major courses, your science, your math, your history, your English, I sucked at English the most.
Actually, I did too, ironically enough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just horrible at it. And it may be just because our language, believe it or not,
is the hardest in the world to actually learn because we have words like two that have 24 different meanings. And so you look at the way that our country is, and you have somebody like that who we put up on a pedestal because she is so stupid. Remember, Kim Kardashian got popular because of a sex tape. Okay, so you
right. We have people that are famous for being famous.
Exactly. And so now with LeVar Ball, this guy literally is the ultimate just overbearing parent. Now let's set it aside, and I know the argument's always going to be, well, it's great that there's actually a black man that is around his kids and being a good father figure. First off, I'm not talking one bit about what he does inside of his home as far as teaching his kids and raising his kids. But at the same time, he literally now has developed this character. Okay, now if you remember, and I know that you were a wrestling fan, or at one point in time, you've watched wrestling whatsoever.
Yeah, a little bit. I wouldn't say I was a fan, no. But I've seen some matches.
But if I told you Stone Cold Steve Austin,
yeah,
you know who I'm talking about.
Of course.
Okay. Now, Stone Cold Steve Austin used to come out, you would hear the glass shatter, and he would just come walking out to that ring, and you would see him mouthing something.
Mm-hmm.
You would see him just looks like you're going, you can't hear him, but he's going off on it. And the whole time, he's just sitting there just saying all this stuff. Yesterday on his podcast, he was asked, when you were walking down to the ring, what were you saying? And he said, I was so into character that all I was saying the entire time is I'm going to beat your beep, 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 beep. But actually, he's saying it, you MF and all this other stuff. He's going through it and he goes, I was living that Stone Cold character.
Right.
That's who I was.
It was almost like a Daniel Day-Lewis with the
exactly.
Abraham Lincoln movie. Like, you actually put yourself into
yes.
the mind of being in character all the time.
He said, from the moment that I stepped out from behind that curtain, I was no longer, I think Steve Williams is his real name.
Yeah,
he goes, I was Stone Cold Steve Austin. That's who I lived. LeVar Ball is now become a character, and every time he steps outside,
I think that's a fair analysis.
He has to. He's living this character now. And again, He's raised two great kids. Okay, minus the whole fact that they didn't know that you shouldn't steal inside of a country that, you know, could literally probably chop your hand off for stealing.
Well, you shouldn't steal anywhere,
no.
But especially not in
exactly.
In, especially not there.
If you were going to steal something from China, just go to Chinatown. Like just take them there.
Right.
I mean, they're going to give it to you for a dollar anyway. But you can. What he has done as a parent is tremendous. But this character that he has now developed and become. There's parts of radio, and this was one thing. I used to do Top 40 radio, okay? And I would wake up every morning. I'd get to work at 3 o'clock in the morning. And as I woke up, I would then, once I went outside, because I was on a radio, on a popular radio station, when I was outside with my girlfriend, my family, or anything like that, they didn't want the actual person that I was. They wanted Joe Hunk. They wanted me to be in character. And no matter if I went to dinner, if I went to a if I went to shopping, if I went to a movie,
right, and I
they
get that.
Always wanted that.
And I know that you've experienced this too. When I go out, and this actually happened to me once on a first date, which was really funny. When you go out and you run into people that recognize you from the radio,
yeah.
They don't want you to talk about, like, if they meet you, they don't want to know about what's going on in your personal life.
Yeah.
Like when it's with me,
yeah.
They want to say, hey, how about what's going on in the White House right now?
Well, and to take it back to wrestling. You know, The Rock and some of the greatest characters of all time were not characters. They weren't. They were
right.
a part of that person that they were able to take and to become themselves and to grow into themselves. Obviously, Undertaker's not one because literally he wasn't an Undertaker. But what I'm talking about is Stone Cold Steve Austin. He is now still, and you can listen to his podcast, a drunk redneck that cusses like crazy and will beat your tail if he can. I mean, that's who he is. When he was stunning Steve Austin, when he was taken around and holding the million-dollar belt, like, that was a character. When he was, like, I want to say, like, Hollywood Steve or whatever he was, whenever
I think the
blondes, the elite, whatever it was.
I think it's fair to say that LeVar Ball has almost adopted this caricature of a person that's not even 100% real, but at the same time, I think there is an aspect of him, like what you're saying, where he took at least a part of his personality and amplified
yes.
it to turn into this character.
Yes.
Because, honestly, I know there's going to be some Trump fans that aren't happy with me saying this. I think the reason that he and Trump can't get along is because they're too dang similar.
Well, that's why a lot of relationships don't work. You know the reason why my wife and I fight the most? Because we're too alike. We really are. I mean, you look at college
but
football
these are two
season,
guys with massive, massive egos.
Yes.
Who do not ever admit that they're wrong or that they might have not handled a situation the right way. And so you've got Trump who, I mean, the guy's an attention hog, just like LeVar Ball. He thinks that he is due a thank you. He's like the guy that sends you a present and then waits next to the mailbox for the thank you card.
Right.
And then you've also got LeVar Ball, who is so full of himself and so above admitting that he or anyone in his family ever did anything wrong that he doesn't even want to acknowledge that there was something wrong to say thank you for helping me out with.
Yes. And that's where that because they're so similar is the reason why they clash. It's, again, it's the same side of the magnet. Is what it is. They push against each other.
They're two North Poles.
Yeah, exactly. That they're pushing against each other. And so that is where all of this comes is he has built up this character, and anytime he steps outside, they want this character. Now, remember, look, Donald, I want to assume, now I will say that I have never been in a boardroom with Donald Trump. I can go ahead and say this. I want to say that the person we see on camera is not the actual person that you see whenever he goes down to a negotiation.
He's an exaggerated version of who Donald Trump
That's exactly
really is.
What it is. Yeah. Remember, he is an actor. Okay, he's not Ronald Reagan-type actor. He had his own reality show, which, by the way, the word reality was always in quotes. It was scripted, okay?
A lot of it, yeah.
Exactly. My wife loves the show Total Divas, and that's the only way I can actually get her to watch a little bit of wrestling. But the whole time I'm thinking, you realize that a lot of this is scripted, right? Like this is not them just going, because I'm, you know what, today I'm just going to decide that how about we just go skydiving for the fun of it? Like just you woke up today and you just decided you wanted to go skydiving? Yeah, and what is that? Is that the doorbell? Oh, my seven friends are also already here.
Right, and that's what
Wait,
I said.
What?
My favorite reality show, one of the only reality shows I ever got into was Duck Dynasty.
Yeah.
Now, the stuff that they actually said, most of that was probably not scripted.
Yeah.
But the idea that one of the workers at the Duck Dynasty place just happened to be having to take care of his buddy's iguana, and somehow it got loose in the factory, don't tell me that that wasn't intentional.
No, and again, the one show that I hate, I say it, is probably, there's certain people in this world I don't understand why and how they got famous other than the Catch Me Outside chick, because I understand, is Lizard Lick Towing. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, only reason I know this show even exists is because for one month out of the year, college basketball forces me to watch True TV. It's the only time I actually turn on that channel. It's god awful. I don't even know why it says True TV because all of it is just reruns of stupid shows. But and again, I know you love it, like probably Impractical Jokers or something.
No, actually, I don't. I never watched True TV.
All right, good. We're on the
never
same page.
Seen it.
Now, and every once in a while, because these basketball games will go on for the first couple of days, they go on until like midnight, 1 a.m. And every once in a while, I can't stay awake, all right? Every once in a while, I fall asleep. I woke up, and I was watching this Lizard Lick Towing. And they're in the middle of some party. And they go, Rufus. I don't know what his name is. I'm just making something up. Come on out here.
But his name probably was Rufus.
I would laugh if that really was his name. I can't really remember. Literally, I've watched this show for 3 minutes, and I almost wanted to kill myself. So he walks out. You know that truck we've been trying to get? Yeah. All right, you know how we're here at this party? Yeah. Somebody in this party is driving that vehicle because it is outside. Are you serious? All right, now we got to figure out how to get that. I'm like, I'm sitting here going, oh, really? Okay, that's not as scripted as possibly can. You have 12 people inside your little party, and one of them is the one that's getting, and then the wife comes out, and which, by the way, she looks like she could bench press all of them because she is a beast.
Yeah, okay? I actually have seen her before.
I don't mean like making fun of her. I'm just saying the girl looks like she works out and could probably squat like 500 pounds. And I'm looking at this, and she's like, you can't take that car. It's one of our friends. I'm just like, oh my god, no! I'm out. That's it. Because they're all scripted. He has become this scripted person, and now he has to live that life because every time he walks out, that's what people are expecting to see.
And that's got to be exhausting to be on call like that. But you know, interesting thoughts there. And we're going to get into what's going on at Tennessee.
Oh,
there is a crap storm brewing up in Knoxville. We'll get there in just a second.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in, and you may notice that we've got some bumper music here that is indicative of Tennessee.
As redneck as it comes, man.
That's right. A little bluegrass getting in there. Well, bluegrass is more hillbilly than redneck.
I know, but I mean, it's
a small but important difference.
If you've never ever seen a video of her singing that song, like the mental picture that you get... is somebody right now around the Jack Daniel's distillery. Just, that's all you're thinking of.
And that's probably what happened.
Even though it's a dry county.
I tell you what, before we get into that, though, why don't we go ahead and go to Dennis on line one. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, man. Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
Well, now look, I'm sure we can agree to disagree on things, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But I do see a lot of one-sidedness. Especially when we're talking about children, youth, and young adults being molested, sexually abused, and raped, and all that kind of stuff. I see a lot of one-sidedness because I know how you all can talk about somebody coming out 40 years later, but you
Dennis, do you have anything to say on what we were actually talking about, the LeVar Ball situation, tax reform, anything?
Yes, I do.
Okay, we'll get to that.
Okay. In your commercial, I can talk about this. It seems that you keep putting. Okay, first of all, I'll talk about this right here.
Okay.
Now they say you're a Bible scholar, correct?
Yeah.
But it seems that you promote somebody acting who they are not, and you were talking about Trump. You know, the way he acts on film is one thing, but he's not really that way.
Okay.
But is that biblically sound? To be in the life of Christ, to be one person in public and somebody else behind closed doors, is that?
No.
Okay, so that's what I'm saying, and I you know, it really burns me up when I keep hearing about the praise about George Washington. I mean, because see, the thing is, it's projecting a false Christianity to people if you keep harping that George Washington was a Christian when. Things he did was unchristlike.
He was a Christian.
Well, but then we discussed this. It's impossible, even though the laws of the land were manipulated, where it said all men are created equal, but certain were slaves, and he had slaves for over 50 years.
Okay, let me ask a question.
To be a Christian those 50 years he owned slaves.
Okay, let me ask a question, okay? And again, this is somebody that's not on News Talk, and I'm generally
I can
asking
barely
this
hear
question.
You.
Okay, so here's my question. Is it illegal for you right now to own a car?
No, it's not illegal for me to own a car.
Okay. In that time, owning a slave was just like owning a car. Now,
it was not. It was a manipulation of the law when it said all men are created equal.
Well, now, here's the thing, though, and this is what you're overlooking. George Washington did release his slaves the moment he was able to do so.
Yes,
that's historically accurate. Did you go back and read the book that I was talked to you about the last time we brought this up?
I did. However, and another thing, Caleb, I did send you my numbers over in private message, and I said if you call me on this issue, we'll only talk about cancer. We won't talk about the show, but I want to connect you with some people who have some serious.
Right, and that's fine. But let's get off of that. That's something between you and me in private. Let's talk about
the issue. I want the public to know about this too. You know, because there are cures for cancer. But I'll stay on this here. George Washington released his slaves over to his wife.
His slave. He did release his slaves completely.
No, to his. Oh. No, okay, then, you know, you'd have to show me the evidence of that, and we can get on that later.
All right, yeah, that's fine.
Can I ask a question? Why are we arguing about something from 200 years ago?
Because people are representing George Washington as being a Christian and living a Christian life and being a devout Christian when that is not true.
How does that affect you?
Huh?
How does that affect you? How does that affect you?
He just has his panties in a twist I talk about George Washington.
So, I mean, how does that affect your ability to live your life?
That's fair to say, because I don't wear panties.
How does that affect your life? How does that affect your ability?
To be gay.
Okay, again, I'm asking a question. How does that affect your ability to...
All right, Dennis, cool, you can't just talk over people.
Hey, man, we appreciate it. Look, here's my thing.
You can't call in saying you want a discussion, and then every time someone says something, try to talk over
I understand that in this city, and especially on shows that are here on News Radio 1440, that there is a very huge divide among a lot of bung races. Okay, I get that. But my thing is, why are we going to argue about something from 200 years ago that does not affect your ability to make money in this country, that does not affect your ability to get an education in this country, that does not affect your ability to live your life however you seem choose to legally? Why does it matter what happened 200 years ago?
Well, see, I got to be honest with you, Joe. I'm going to disagree because I do think that it matters whether or not George Washington was a Christian, because it does matter in how we see him and the light, and then the light of history allows us to see a way forward.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is Dennis's history is bad. He's using revisionist history that does not take into account original records and the way that Washington actually was with his slaves. He's taking opinions of things he think might have happened.
Well,
so if we're going to be honest brokers and talk about history, we have to actually know the history and do the research ourselves.
But even again, and you know that I'm a Christian,
of course.
But even I know that the Bible that is sold today in stores is a very, very limited version of what was chosen to be put into the Bible.
Well, I mean, there were generations of scholars that had to sort through some of that.
But you see what I'm saying? Like, there's a director's cut somewhere. Okay, now again, it's probably non-existent anymore. But you see what I'm saying? Like,
the most accurate one that we have today is actually the New American Standard, and the reason is because they went back to the original Greek manuscripts, which we have about 900.
Yeah.
And so there is a way to get back to the original.
Right.
And go to the original meaning, but I see your point in that we are looking at it through somebody else's lens because we're having to trust that they translated the Greek correctly. Now, you can look up the Greek online, which is a great resource.
But through time, again, you know, the written documents are around 2,000 years old. Let's just use the 2,000 number because we know it's 2017.
Well, that would have been the New Testament.
But you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some documents may not have held up. Some documents might have gotten lost in a war. Like, there, you know what I'm saying?
Well, now, actually, we have a lot of corroborating evidence that shows that they are very similar, like different manuscripts of the same text that show that there wasn't much change over time.
I am one of these people that are under the belief that the history and the way that we look at it is based on our own interpretation and what we see. Now, again, that's the way that we look at a lot of things in life. And for me, as I look at, and again, from being in this city for a year and a half that I have been, I have truly seen that, honestly, and I can be honest about this on 1440.
Sure.
This city's messed up. It's very backwards in a lot of ways. And for us to constantly want to fight about racial divides and all this other stuff, I don't understand it. I still haven't figured it out, mainly because from where I come from, this stuff doesn't happen.
Well, you remember what I said about using history as a light to look forward?
Yes.
That doesn't work if you constantly are trying to go back to the history and don't want to move forward from it.
Well, it's
like you have to be able to look forward while you're using the history. So I see what you're saying there. Part of the reason is people are not letting these old wounds heal up.
Well, and for me, as I look back and say again, It is the equivalent because, okay, so random question for you because when was the last time, and we've talked about this over on 740, when was the last time Auburn and Georgia played a game against each other in the city of Atlanta?
Honestly, I have no idea.
Not in Athens. Again, so the way that this rivalry started is they used to play in the city of Atlanta. Eventually, it moved to the Crampton Bowl for a few games. It went to Columbus for, I want to say, like 20 to 30 years. Then it went on campus, okay? Mm-hmm. And there are some, you know, sites in between there that kind of changed throughout the whole time. But this is the football game, the first time that they are playing in the city of Atlanta against each other in over 100 years. The last time they played in the city of Atlanta was 1915.
Wow.
Exactly. It was 1915. And so you're seeing them play in Atlanta for the first time in over 100 years. And it would be the equivalent of us going on the air right now and wanting to argue a flag being thrown in that football game in 1915.
Right.
What does it matter? What does it affect now?
Like No, I understand, and I do think that that's a fair point. Although we are quickly running out of time.
Yes.
So I'll have to say thank you, Joe. I appreciate it. Chaplin's report is up next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
8:10. For this is the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, says the Lord, I will put my laws into their minds, and I will write them on their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. We have a quick one here today, so we're going to do the best that we can to jump straight into the scripture. We've talked a lot this week about internal proofs of the Bible. And one of the internal truths that we actually got into just a little bit before the break is narrative continuity. C.S. Lewis once said that the Bible reads like a long novel. You have a buildup, you have a climax, and you have a fallout. Which wouldn't be surprising if you were just talking about a novel, but the thing is, the parts of the Bible make more sense over time as though they were written almost to be seen as one continuous novel. But with 66 books written by 40 different authors over the span of about 1,500 years, there is absolutely no human mind that could have conceived that, nor a human hand that could have orchestrated it. And so there's this sense of continuity all throughout the scripture that seems as though when you read parts of the Bible that are later, for example, in the New Testament, that make things in the Old Testament make more sense. Well, the people in the Old Testament, it seems as though they were writing this to help understand concepts that would be available in the New Testament, and yet they didn't know that the New Testament was going to exist. That's something that could have only come from divine inspiration. Hebrews 10:1 says, "For the law, since it was only a shadow of the good things to come and not the very form of things, can never by the same sacrifices which they offer continually year by year make perfect those who draw near." You see, even the sacrificial laws were a preview to Jesus Christ. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.